What's going on, everybody, and welcome to Retrograde number 2. Once again, I am the managing editor here at the State Hornet, Chris Woodard.
And I am James Fife. I'm the podcast editor.
And here at Retrogrades, we take a look at pieces of media from 20 years ago, whether that is an album, movie, or maybe a video game, or anything else that piques our interest. But today, we are revisiting an album released in June of 2004. That album is Hot Fuss by The Killers. So, of course, The Killers, based out of Las Vegas, a lot of huge hits on this album, a lot of huge hits that kind of went into the records of 2004. So first, James, do you have a favorite song by The Killers? Just maybe not this album, any of them?
Well, out of the two all-timers on there, I think my favorite song on there would be Somebody Told Me. It's like, I was like, when I was going through the album, I didn't look at all the names. I just kind of hit play. And then that song came on. I was like, oh my God, this song is on this album? That's awesome. Alongside with Mr. Brightside, I think it's like right afterward. One of my favorite songs by them, I think.
Yeah, that's a fun one. My favorite song by The Killers, it's on a later album, but it is a song called Human. Kind of a little bit of a sadder song. And they have a lot of weird kind of optimism and cynicism in their lyrics. And that was one that I think kind of embodies that. But all right, yeah, so first we're going to get into some context about 2004 and about when this album came out. And I specifically want to talk to you, James, about just rock music in 2004. And at this time, a lot of different subgenres of rock were able to kind of coexist in the mainstream listening, rotation here. But it was being pulled in so many directions. We had like this hard rock and new metal kind of feel, with things like Slipknot, Linkin Park. We had the post-punk rock bands like Green Day, Bowling for Soup. We had emo. My Chemical Romance had a huge year in 2004, but we also had like a Simple Plan, The Used back then, and alternative, maybe not as popular, but on the rise. We had Franz Ferdinand with a big year. Also, Arcade Fire was starting out, and Muse was also kind of making some noise. But British pop rock and sort of like the synth wave that The Killers have, that did not really come into the fold at that time. Like, it sort of died away in the 90s, at least in American culture. Killers kind of brought it back. There was some pop rock going on at the time, like Maroon 5 is a great example, but that was very obvious pop music. But this pop rock kind of feel that the Killers kind of brought it back. So I want to ask you, it sort of seemed like, from how I remember it, like rock fans were listening to sort of all of these things at once. There wasn't so much of like a war of like, oh, you listen to emo stuff, like boo, or like, oh, you listen to Seether and Three Doors Down, boo, you know. I know the Gen Z kids call that divorced dad rock these days, which is the greatest genre name that anyone's come up with. Kudos to whoever did that. But I want to ask you, how do you remember it? How do you remember the rock music at that time? Like, do you remember it the same way I do about it being synergy?
Yeah. I mean, I still listen to all this music, like, at the same time, even now. But especially, maybe not in 2004, but when I was, like, in middle school 4 years later, like, definitely, like, Linkin Park, Green Day, MCR. And even my parents were listening to, like, these same kind of bands, not so much Linkin Park, but definitely Green Day, Offspring, President of the United States. I know that's, like, 90s, kind of going in that direction. But they still have like that inspiration and lots of just mix going around. And I also listened to like a lot of metal bands back then too. Anyway, but yeah, I think there was a lot of mix and there wasn't like a lot of infighting for one specific, except for one specific group. And that was like metalheads, actually. One of my friends who listened, like, he's like, "What? Why do you listen to MCR? That's not metal. That's just sad emo punk." I'm like, "Yeah, but it's really good." I only remember it slightly differently. I only remember like one specific group being like, "Hey, why you listen to punk?" You know, but everybody seemed to get along. It was great.
Yeah, of all the kind of examples I gave, I think the only one that I think still existed a little bit on its own was sort of like the alternative sound, like Franz Ferdinand. Modest Mouse also kind of started in 2004, and I think that that still kind of got kept into like the depths of like music nerds. But the rest of these genres were across every radio station. You know, this, of course, was radio time. We didn't have the aux cords and the satellite radio or even, like, the Bluetooth in our cars and everything. So we were held victim to the general rotation of the radio. But you would hear every single one of these bands on, like, the top 40 kind of radio stations. And even the rock stations, even, like, the hard rock stations, there'd be a mix of, like, okay, here's some Linkin Park, here's some Three Doors Down, and then okay, here's some Green Day, you know, here's some My Chemical Romance. Like it was a mix of all of those things. I don't really, like, going into the 2010s and even going into, like, music we have right now, I don't really ever remember rock having, like, multiple subgenres being that popular all at once. And so I think that's something that kind of ties into what helped the Killers gain fame, is just how everything was able to coexist like that. But yeah, thank you for having that conversation with me.
Sure.
All right, so I want to get into a little bit of the origin of the Killers. So, of course, once again, they are based out of Las Vegas, Nevada. They started actually as a lot with Oasis, and Brandon Flowers, the lead singer, keyboard player, and vocalist, he was a big fan of that British pop rock that we were talking about here, and Oasis was a very big influence on him. And so when you listen to this band, you'll hear a lot of influences like David Bowie, The Cure, Oasis, and that led to them kind of bonding over Oasis, the band. That's how they found each other, and then they ended up writing their first song, the first song being Mr. Brightside, of course, their biggest hit. Right before we were recording, I looked, and it is past 2 billion plays on Spotify, with a B, 2 billion plays, and I think that song is a really great analogy to kind of talk about the band's, like, optimistic rise. Mr. Brightside is about just being optimistic. It's about kind of believing in yourself and knowing that there's a better, you know, the grass is always greener kind of thing. You know, there's always a better way to look at things. And that's sort of how the band wrote the song. And that's sort of how they grew to fame as well. But I do think that they were a victim to sort of the pop music vacuum that just sucked them up really quickly, mm-hmm. and just launched them into arenas. And while that's what Brandon Flowers wanted, was to be this big pop rock, synth heavy arena anthem band, I don't think they were really ready for it, and so that kind of translated into this album. We had, like, tracks 2 through 5 are probably just absolutely untouchable. That's where all the singles are. There's 4 songs right there that are just the hits you remember from Hot Fuzz, but the rest of it gets a little tricky. But how do you feel about the songs overall?
I totally agree with you. Mr. Brightside, Smile Like You Mean It, Somebody Told Me, and All These Things That I've Done, 2 through 5, amazing songs. Some of them kind of slip through the cracks, but 2 of them definitely are all timers. I think I have it kind of like, I kind of have them like ranked, like the all timer songs, Mr. Brightside, Somebody Told Me, clearly.
Yep.
And then there's like songs that are really good, but have somehow like kind of got forgotten by the mainstream landscape a little bit. There's like Smile Like You Mean It, All the Things You've Done, On Top, Believe Me Natalie is actually pretty good, I think. And the final song on the bonus track, Glamorous Indie Rock and Roll, I'm like, this song hits hard. Like, I was listening to it last night. I don't know if in the newsroom, I was like, oh, I was just like in a trance. I was like, this is great. So I think overall, I do like synthwave, and this is like definitely a top synthwave album for me, I think. Well, most of the songs. We'll get into the other songs that I kind of didn't like, but the songs that slipped through the cracks, but probably for a reason. Jenny Was a Friend of Mine, Andy, You're a Star, Change Your Mind, Midnight Show, and Everything Will Be All Right. I feel like those songs, I kind of stopped paying attention a little bit. And then when the Believe Me Natalie or Glamorous Indie Rock came back on, I was like, oh, these are the songs I want to listen to more than those ones. I feel like those songs kind of slipped through the cracks, but for a reason, because they're not as entertaining. So I understand when you say that they weren't ready for it, because a few of the songs kind of didn't hit as hard, right?
Yeah, and it's a very top-heavy album with those singles, and I agree with you with some of those songs slip through the cracks. If I had a second favorite Killer song, it would absolutely be All These Things That I've Done. That song, I think, is just very beautiful. It's got just a fun melody, and that's one thing that the Killers do really well, is their melodies are very fun. It kind of helps build that arena anthem, like kind of sing-along feel that everyone can get into. But they grow victim to that throughout some songs. Midnight Show, I specifically want to highlight as a low light. I think that it is just an awful song. And when you really listen to it with the context of the rest of the album, it's very clear that they're recycling melodies. Like, if you listen to Somebody Told Me and then listen to Midnight Show again, and you'll hear some of the same melodies in terms of, like, the singing and also some of the same guitar riffs that they're doing. The synths are different, but that's pretty much it. Like, literally just sing Somebody Told Me.
Oh, yeah,
over.
Yeah, that's actually a good idea. I know that
song. Yeah,
Oh my God,
you
it
see
is
what
the
I'm
same.
Saying? Yeah. Yeah. If you cut the lyrics to Somebody Told Me and just put it over the production of Midnight Show, you wouldn't really recognize it was a different song unless you were very in tune with the song. And yeah, so you see a lot of that. Like the singles are great. I'm never going to diminish the singles on this album because even Smile Like You Mean It is such a fun song. But the rest of the album kind of feels like here's my first attempt at synthwave pop. You know, and it very feels much like, hey, I listened to David Bowie 3 times in the garage and then got stoned for the first time and made an album. That's kind of what this feels like. I do want to push back on you. You said you really like On Top. That is a song that I think Brandon Flowers was very much like, hey, let's see what I can do on the keyboard. And like, let me show you how much I love synthwave. And it was just so, pun intended, over the top with the synth heavy, heavy approach. And it ends up being really distracting. I don't think it really matches with the rest of the production that goes along with this album. And I will say this kind of goes ahead, but as the band has grown after Hot Fuzz, they've gone a little bit more away from the synth, just a little bit. It's been a little bit more of like a like sort of a cherry on top and not necessarily like the flavor of the ice cream. So I liked how they took that approach in the future. But On Top, we see it really being just over the top.
So On Top, I really like On Top because of that little, like, you see where I could do like do 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 do, because that sounds like me playing the keyboard, but that's probably a bad thing. But that, now that I think about it, I really like something. I don't know what it is, but something about that like kind of attracted me to it. I was like, oh, that's really nice, actually. The little tunes that he puts in the background.
The other song I want to kind of look down upon here is Everything Will Be All Right. I don't understand. And here's the thing: when you craft an album, it's nice to have sort of like an interlude and sort of have like a fresh breath of air, kind of like a little bit of a palate cleanser in there. And I think that's what they were going for with Everything Will Be All Right. But I don't understand it whatsoever. It feels like a poor attempt at sort of covering a Bob Marley song with this like drowned out kind of like echoing like reverb effect on the mic the whole time. Brandon Flowers' voice, it's not going to wow you in terms of like a vocalist, but he does have a good sort of filling in those pop, like the British pop rock kind of sound. He does do a good job of sort of bringing that to the table, but I like, there's no attempt to highlight that on that song. There's not even really an attempt to kind of bring the synth forward like on Top. It's just sort of a weird interlude feeling song, but it's also like the outro. And so, you know, I don't understand pacing wise why they put that there. It felt out of place. And if I were someone like sort of like a A&R here for the Killers, I would just tell them, hey, let's just cut this song.
Yeah. I feel like Flowers doesn't have like the best voice ever. Some of the songs he's like pretty good, like he keeps that catch beat, especially in like songs like Somebody Told Me, da na 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 na. He's really good at that. But then there's like Andy, You're a Star, where his voice is like, I'm like, man, this isn't he's not that good at singing, is he? Because it's like way all over the place. His tone is going all over the place, especially in Andy's You're a Star. That's where it's like most evident to me. That's probably like my least favorite song on this album, really. So because when I listened to it, I was just like, this is like out of tune. I feel like almost.
Yeah, you know? No, it does feel out of tune. Like almost like he's singing off key.
Yeah, way off.
And I feel like that might have been a like purposeful decision. You know, if you're gonna do that, there needs to be a clear reason why. You know, and I can't tell you what that reason is after listening to the song.
Yeah, because if Andy sang like that, he isn't a star. Like
very much so. Yeah. All right, so let's end here. Give me your grade for the album overall. What you got?
Okay, so my grade for this is a B. So a couple of songs are timeless. I think they're going to be remembered for a long time. I've already mentioned them like 5 times, but I'll mention them again. Mr. Brightside, Somebody Told Me. Well, a few of these songs, however, have been forgotten and, you know, just not listened to as much anymore.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to give it a C- here as my grade. And I kind of think about it as class. Like, you know, the singles that are on it, the great songs, are great. They're untouchable. Everything else is just awful work. And so it's enough to get by and pass the class. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how I'm taking this. So I'm giving it a C-. The professor here is going to remember the work, the good work there, and highlight it for a while. And then they're going to kind of forget about the rest of the stuff that went on there. That's how I'm looking at this. You know, we revisited this album to listen to the whole thing. so that we could talk about it here on this podcast. If I ever go back to this album again after I listen to track 5, I am immediately switching it to a different album. It's done.
The bonus track too. Don't forget about Glamorous.
Okay, yeah, let's talk about the bonus track for a second, because the bonus track is fun. Glamorous Indie Rock and Roll, you know, very much a bonus track. Doesn't necessarily fit the rest of the attitude.
It's
and
more
like
a, it's like a love story type of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I really enjoyed that. I was like, damn, I kind of like indie rock and roll too, man. Thank you, Brandon Flowers. So that's how I felt throughout the song. I was like, oh, it felt like almost nostalgic, you know? Mm-hmm. Well, it better be nostalgic. It's a 20-year-old song. Yeah. So, yeah.
All right. So, of course, Retrogrades, we're going to talk about how the album has aged into today in the lens of 2024. And so one thing that really sticks out to me is I do think that the Killers, the sound that they established with Hot Fuss, really pushed forward into the alternative music wave that we got at the end of the 2000s and specifically in the early 2010s. So shameless plug, I also have a show on KSSU here at Sac State called Into the Groove. And this week I talked about that early 2010s alternative wave that kind of came through. So for those of you that don't really remember it, I would classify this with songs like We Are Young by Fun, mm-hmm. Featuring Janelle Monae. We also had Somebody That I Used to Know by Gautier and Kimbra. Another song I'd say is Capital Cities. They did Safe and Sound. That's probably three songs that if you just think about those songs, you remember the era. And what really sticks out to me is if you just plucked Mr. Brightside from 2004 and you put it in a playlist with those songs that I just mentioned and just songs from that time, you wouldn't know any different that that song came out almost 10 years before those songs did. And I think that is really interesting to talk about because alternative music didn't really have too big of a time during 2004. Like I said, Modest Mouse was big and we had Arcade Fire coming up, but in the 2010s, that's where alternative rock had its moment. And I think that a lot of that was built on the sound that Brandon Flowers and his team created here with the Killers. How do you feel about that?
So I feel like that Mr. Brightside was really boosted by 2012 songs such as Somebody I Used to Know and When We Were Young. That's probably why it has that feeling that it's going to go on for a long time.
Yeah.
Because those songs they're moderately popular still today. I can't name one other Gyoti song, but
yeah,
but that's not the fault of the song. It's more of the fault of the dude that wrote the song. But anyway, but I feel like these songs will be around for a while.
And I mean, let's talk about Mr. Brightside a little bit. Like, and I love that it's reemerged a little bit, mm-hmm. not so much because of what we're talking about now, but also it's found a place in sports. And like, you know, we're seeing all these memes coming out about the upcoming college football game, which I can't wait for, by the way. But we're seeing where, like, you know, when you're watching your team get blown out at home, mm-hmm. and then they're blaring Mr. Brightside over the speakers, and everyone's singing along to it, kind of like that shred of optimism just kind of goes across the home crowd, trying to pump them up to get the team inspired. Whether or not it happens is, you know, probably like a 2% chance. But I think that that's a moment that is so fun that we have with that song now that a whole new generation is experiencing. And that's why it's passed 2 billion plays, honestly.
Yeah, it's probably that. It's probably because it's become a meme at this point, right? Memes live forever. You know?
Exactly.
The internet, it's forever.
Yeah. Talking about how this album has aged, I do want to talk a little bit how the band has aged. We talked about Glamorous Indie Rock and Roll, sort of the bonus track there at the end of the song. Mm-hmm. And that song, what I think is important about it, is that it showed that they were willing to grow a bit more and really just accepting the arena anthem kind of brand that they were going for. And so that song is like, the scope of that song is a lot, it's like turned to 10. So it's a lot more like just kind of like loud arena filling anthem and like a very kind of sing along, kind of dance along to kind of thing. Their albums after Hot Fuss were very similar to Hot Fuss in the fact that it had its couple of hits, but it was still kind of struggling to match where it belonged. But now they had released an album. They released an album pretty recently in 2020 called Imploding the Mirage. And I think it's funny now because we're like 16 years from Hot Fuss. They released this album during the pandemic. And this was a time where you can listen to that album compared to Hot Fuss and really see how much they've grown into their own brand and that idea of being this like stadium rocking band. It's really interesting to see now how they've accepted it and how they've grown into it, Brandon Flowers in particular, which was a huge contrast from Hot Fuzz. And yeah, so I think that their sound is just so digestible, the melodies we're talking about, that this does have so much staying power, not just for today, but even 20 more years from now. We're probably, I hope, still going to hear it at football games.
I hope so, yeah.
And basketball games going forward.
If Neil Diamond can do it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and then Mr. Brightside, once again, I mean, you can't talk about this album without talking about it forever. I'm excited to see how they use it in other forms of media as well, not just sports, but even in, like, films, even in video games going forward. Like, how can we see this song used sort of as the meme that it is to kind of apply context to a scene or apply context to, like, a mission of a video game or something like that? I'm really excited to see how they do that. You know, I think there will come a point it might be a little bit overused in a sense, but how many people are really going to complain about this being overused? You know what I mean? I don't think it's really going to happen too much.
Right. Their 20-year anniversary for that song is coming up, so I'm curious what they're going to do in, like, was it June?
In June, yep.
Yeah, I wonder I wonder if they'll do something, because they probably know by now.
Yeah. All right, James, let's wrap it up here to give our real retrograde of how this has aged into 2024. I'll start this time. I'm going to give this one here a solid B in terms of how it's aged, and like I said, it really has to do with how it has aged and how it has pushed popular music, especially rock music, throughout the years, because 10 years after we had all those songs coming out where it just fit in so beautifully, and 10 years after that, it has just had so much staying power that it is a cultural phenomenon, the songs that are on this album. So I got to give it a B in terms of how it has aged.
So how this album has aged, again, I'm gonna give it a B. Right. Like, the album got a B when it came out. The album got a B. It's still, like, the same type of music. So I feel like it really does encapsulate that 2004 type of era, and it really encapsulates that 2012 era, almost 10 years later. So I feel like that they aged well, or some of the songs aged well enough, but past track 5, like you said, Don't bother until, or at least skip to the bonus track.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you everyone for tuning in to Retrogrades Episode 2. We will be back soon with another piece of media from 2004. Not entirely sure what we're doing yet. We have a whole long list that we're excited to bring to everybody. But thank you very much. Anything to close?
No. Thank you for listening.
Later.